2020 has been quite the year, and thanks to listener support, NHPR was right there with you through it all. Become an NHPR sustaining member today at $13 a month or through a one-time gift of $156, and your gift will mean more timely, accurate information available to everyone. Plus, at that level, we're going to send you a pair of Merino Wool NHPR-branded socks, courtesy of Minus 33 in Ashland, New Hampshire. Make your year-end tax-deductible gift at nhpr.org.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Peter Biello, and this is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange. In the absence of a broad national strategy to combat COVID-19, states have been left to decide their own strategies. And as temperatures drop and people head indoors, COVID case numbers are rising at an alarming rate. The New York Times reported yesterday that the states with the fewest COVID-related restrictions now have the most outbreaks. Today on the program, what's New Hampshire doing and how does that compare to approaches taken in neighboring states? We have a panel of journalists with us this hour from New Hampshire, Vermont, Maine, and Massachusetts, and we want your voice to be part of this conversation. What guidelines would you want to see put in place here in New Hampshire? Email us. Our address is exchange@nhpr.org or give us a call. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. And we're going to start the program today with a look at the latest guidance from New Hampshire officials. Yesterday, at Governor Sununu's press conference, he announced
that today a statewide mask mandate would go into effect.
Here's Governor Sununu.
As with many mandates across the country, similar mask mandates, this mandate will apply to all indoor public spaces and outdoors as well when social distancing cannot be maintained. People who have tuned into these press conferences over the last 8 months, I think, know very clearly how seriously we've encouraged mask wearing. It works. The data shows that. It has been proven. The social distancing, incredibly important as well. But today we're really elevating that message even further, given the seriousness of the current crisis.
So that's Governor Sununu speaking yesterday at the press conference. He also explained that this mandate does not apply to schools or restaurants, which already have their own mask wearing guidelines. But it does apply to public places like malls, for example. Let's turn now to Ethan DeWitt of the Concord Monitor, who has been covering the COVID-19 pandemic in New Hampshire. Good morning, Ethan. Thank you very much for being on the program.
Good morning.
So, Ethan, what do you think prompted the governor to make this decision now after so many months of refusing to implement such a mandate?
Well, the governor, in giving the new guidelines and announcing this change, he pointed to a number of metrics that the state has been following that suggest that this second wave that is currently affecting the whole country, but also New Hampshire, is very serious and it is still climbing, and we are not at the peak yet. He pointed to the rate of positive COVID cases compared to tests, and that's hovering around 4 to 5%. He noted that towns across the state, there are a much higher proportion of them have COVID cases. Back in the spring, it was about 50% of towns didn't actually have any COVID cases at all. We're now looking at 75%. So there's definitely been more spread. We're seeing, obviously, daily records in New Hampshire, as in other states, of cases being recorded. And there's evidence that there's substantial spread in all 10 of New Hampshire's counties. And he also pointed to staff shortages at long-term care facilities and other healthcare centers. And kind of all that put together said that he said it was the trigger that finally convinced him to move in the direction of a mask mandate, something that he had been talking about, is something that is not effective. Just a week ago, he was asked about masks, and he said, to the press that there was no evidence that states that implemented mask mandates reduced their cases, and was kind of dismissive of the concept. He has been for months, but I think that the compounding last few weeks of increasing cases caused him to change that calculus.
But okay, so a variety of factors led to this decision. We got an email from Will who says, For the most part, I've been happy with how Governor Sununu has handled the pandemic. One thing that frustrates me, however, is that the statewide mask mandate was only now put into place as the numbers are on the rise again. It seems putting this in place before the numbers began to climb would have made more sense instead of waiting until things got worse. That's the comment from Will by email. Ethan, what about enforcement? This new mask mandate, how does the governor plan on enforcing it?
Sure. So he was asked about this yesterday, and like with many of the, restrictions that he's put on in the last few months, the state is kind of being very cautious about what it says about enforcement. There is technically a penalty that applies to any one of the governor's executive orders, and we've seen this played out this week. The Attorney General's office can issue warnings to businesses. There were three businesses this week that were fined for violating mask restrictions that already were in place for businesses. So there is a mechanism for the Attorney General to implement fines, and there is even a part in the statute that actually can, if you willingly violate an executive order by the governor that's issued under the emergency, the COVID-19 emergency, that can actually lead to a misdemeanor. But the Attorney General's office has been very cautious in implementing this, and the governor indicated yesterday that it's unlikely that the state's going to go into a spate of fines for the mask mandate. More the goal, the governor said, was more to kind of educate, and that's something that he said throughout the past few months when it comes to other kinds of mandates as well.
And what about those towns and cities that already had some kind of mask mandate in place? Will things change much for folks who live in those places?
No, I don't think that you would expect to see much of a change. The mask mandate that the governor enforced kind of carves out any exceptions that towns want to make in terms of they can make their mandates stricter. They can impose their own fines if they'd like. The statewide mandate doesn't affect that. So I think the cities that you've seen that have gone that direction, likely for residents in those cities who have gotten used to mask mandates in the last few months, not much will change.
Okay. And what about the potential for locking down either all sectors of the state or part of the state? Has Governor Sununu indicated he's open to closing certain parts of the state if COVID-19 gets bad enough?
Well, he has said, as he has said with masks, that he's not taking anything off the table. That's something that he says a lot. So it is kind of hard to read the tea leaves on that, because obviously he said that about masks for forever, and then now we have a mask mandate. But last week, I should note, the governor was very clear that he is not looking to do any kind of lockdowns, despite the cases rising to record levels. That he said that, the cases, the daily case count in New Hampshire could hit over 1,000 cases a day, but that's not the factor that he would implement to shut down restaurants and stores like he did in the spring. He points to other factors like hospitalizations. If the hospitals become, too full and we are at a surge capacity point, or mortality rate, which is not, even though cases are rising, the mortality rate is not as high as it was back in the spring, although it is climbing pretty fast. So the governor has said that he is opposed to that one, and he says that his argument is that because there are more tests, more testing being done, because there's ostensibly more contact tracing, although the state has pulled back on that, that the state doesn't have, has a lot more kind of means to control the spread of the virus that don't involve locking things down. But he is facing, some regional pressures. Vermont's governor, as I'm sure we'll get to, has obviously closed down bars, and, other states kind of further south in New England and towards New York are also kind of sort of starting to implement restrictions on gatherings of 10 people or more. Sununu is resisting that, and one factor he points to is economics. That's something that's kind of going into his calculus. He directly brought up the fact that there is no federal aid package right now, that there hasn't been a second CARES Act stimulus package, and that ties the hands of restaurants who are looking for assistance if they have to shut down, which they did have in the spring. So he has so far signaled that he does not want further lockdowns, but he is facing significant pressure to do so.
Okay. And you've reported and you've tweeted about Ethan DeWitt, the numbers presented at previous press conferences and how they might be a little bit misleading to anybody looking at a particular chart that the governor's presented. Can you explain what happened there?
Sure. So this is, I was kind of pointing to one particular chart that the governor was using that showed a massive spike in the March and May time period, and then not much of a spike. And this was on kind of percentage of, you know, positives and like the percent positive rate. And the problem with comparing the March and May period to now is that the amount of tests that were being administered back then versus now doesn't compare at all. We're, the state has significantly ramped up its testing capacity. So to kind of show that visually is a little bit misleading if you were to look at that. But to his credit, the governor has also pointed to other graphs that demonstrate the rise in cases, that demonstrate the rise in hospitalizations. And as I noted before, the numbers are, you know, not something to ignore. We may be all used to this pandemic, but to take a look at any of the trackers that are out there and look at the state's rising hospitalizations and case numbers, this is something that is still climbing, and we are not nearly at the peak of the second wave.
Well, listeners, we're going to be speaking about a variety of facets of the COVID-19 pandemic today. We're going to talk about long-term care facilities. We'll get updates on the spread of the virus in the states surrounding New Hampshire. We'll talk about mask mandates in those states as well, travel guidelines, contact tracing, and also vaccine distribution and hospital capacity. If you have questions about any of that, give us a call now. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also email us. The address is exchange@nhpr.org. I want to bring in a few more voices now who can shed light on what our neighboring states are doing. With us is Katie Jickling, health reporter for Vermont Digger. We've also got Patty White, health reporter for Maine Public Radio, and Martha Biebinger, health reporter from WBUR. Thank you all of you for being on the program today.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
So let's get an update on the spread of this virus in other states. I want to get a sense of the magnitude of the pandemic where you are. And let's start with you, Patty White, in Maine. What is the rate of growth in the state of Maine right now?
Well, just to kind of give you a picture of what's happened over the past several weeks, a month ago, our positivity rate was 0.5%. Now it's 2.6%. A month ago, there were 9 people in the hospital. Now there are 88. And just as Ethan was saying, in New Hampshire, we're consistently breaking records for new daily cases. So this week, we had an all-time high of 246 cases in one day, new cases. And a month ago, we were seeing just, you know, around 20 or so new cases a day. So there has been dramatic growth, exponential growth in Maine.
Exponential growth in Maine. And Martha Biebinger, how about in Massachusetts?
Well, Peter, the curve that we saw hit a spike in May is climbing again. It hasn't actually hit the same level, but it looks very similar to what we saw happening back in March and April. So there's a lot of concern at the hospitals. No one has hit capacity yet, but the state has started this kind of regional plan so that they can control what's happening within 5 different areas of Massachusetts and try to avoid having to go to any other, you know, new statewide bans on elective care or something of that nature.
I see. So are the case numbers worse where the most people are in the most densely packed areas?
Well, we haven't done the exact analysis on that, but definitely you see the highest rates in the communities where people tend to live more closely together, more people, you know, per square foot, literally, where there are more essential workers who have to leave their homes and go out and interact a lot. And it also correlates to some degree where we see people who, for whom English is not their first language. So they may not be getting all of the same messaging and education that is going out in as broadly in English.
I see. Okay. So that's the story from Massachusetts. And Katie Jickling in Vermont, how are things in Vermont?
Yesterday, we saw a record number of cases at 148, which is about double what we saw for a record in the first wave. And if you remember, Vermont did very, very well throughout the summer. It was the state was touted by Anthony Fauci and others as really being a model for containing the virus. And so we are starting to see that spread in ways that we haven't before. It is primarily happening between families and between in small gatherings, people gathering around food or alcohol and letting their guard down and not wearing their masks. So the state has imposed quite stringent guidelines last week, banning all multi-household gatherings.
And Patty White, to you in Maine, is the surge in COVID-19 cases in Maine attributed to family gatherings as well, or is there a mix of causes of the surge?
It is the CDC officials here, the state CDC officials here are saying it's small household gatherings. So it's the same kind of scenario. And it's really shifted where in the beginning stages of the pandemic, outbreaks were really driving cases. Now it's community transmission. We still see lots of outbreaks, but it's just out in the community and really being driven by these small household gatherings.
I see. Yeah, I did want to ask about outbreaks, too, because a lot of them have been happening in long-term care facilities. I'll stay with you, Patty White, on that. Have outbreaks at long-term care facilities been the bulk of the COVID-19 deaths and illnesses in the state? Or what do you think?
I think they do account for most of the deaths in the state. What's interesting, too, though, is that our metrics are pretty good, compared to the rest of the U.S. I think we have the third lowest per capita case and death rate in nursing homes. So I guess on that metric, compared to the rest of the U.S., we're doing pretty well. But still in Maine, most of the deaths at this point, I believe, are attributed to people who are in nursing homes.
Long-term care facilities have been hit hard by the virus here in New Hampshire. State officials announced 5 new outbreaks at long-term care facilities yesterday. There are now 11 outbreaks at long-term care facilities in New Hampshire. DHHS Commissioner Lori Chibonette says they're giving an additional $6 million to these facilities to increase testing, recommending testing for all staff once a week. What about in Vermont, Katie Jickling? Well, how's Vermont handling outbreaks at long-term care facilities, if there are any in that state?
There are a couple ongoing outbreaks at long-term care facilities, and the state has been pretty good about doing significant and widespread testing at these facilities. So several weeks ago, Vermont instituted weekly tests at all these facilities for both residents and staff. And that is continuing. And there are also continuing to do increased outreach, encouraging the facilities on their own to increase restrictions from visitors and that sort of thing.
I see. And Martha Beeminger, what about long-term care facilities in Massachusetts? Are they experiencing a large number of outbreaks as well?
Yes. Yeah, so we get what's called cluster data once a week from the state. It just came out last night for the latest week. And as both Patty and I believe Katie said, the vast majority of the clusters are very small. They're just maybe 2 people, but they're in households. So it's the idea that somebody's coming home and likely infecting somebody else that they live with. The second highest category is long-term care facilities. And there are currently 206 clusters in long-term care facilities in Massachusetts with about 1,500 cases. A cluster in the area of 6 or 7 people in 206 long-term care facilities.
Wow, that seems
that too many numbers.
Really scary.
Sorry.
No. Well, the numbers seem scary. I mean, it's scary for people living there and for their family members who are hoping for the best for their family members living in long-term care facilities. Ethan DeWitt, can you comment on the state's response to outbreaks at long-term care facilities here in New Hampshire?
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of give a contrast. New Hampshire has one of the highest rates of deaths of all of its COVID-19 deaths in nursing home facilities. In fact, actually, we are the highest in the country. 82% of New Hampshire's total COVID-19 deaths have been at long-term care facilities. So we're actually a bit of an anomaly in some ways in that sense. And, my colleague Teddy Rosenbluth wrote about this interesting dynamic when it comes to funding. Because our death rates and our cases are kind of being concentrated in these long-term care facilities, the federal funding formula that kind of distributes federal aid to these nursing homes disadvantages our state. So actually, even though we have the highest proportion of deaths in our nursing homes, we have one of the lowest in the country per nursing home, federal assistance. And it's about five times lower than the national average. So there's an interesting data point. In terms of what the state is doing, the state has followed Vermont's lead on the weekly testing that was announced recently. But it is still something, as you noted, Peter, that is a continuing problem. 11 outbreaks in total. And just looking at the data here, you have St. Teresa Rehabilitation and Nursing Center in Manchester has 9 deaths. 18 staff cases, 31 resident cases, and it's spread up to Coos County. The Coos County Nursing Home has 43 resident cases right now, 50 staff cases and 3 deaths. So it's something that, when we talk about the cases rising, we talk about how community spread has made contact tracing harder. There is certainly more community spread around the state, but that doesn't mean that the outbreaks in the concentrated areas of the long-term care facilities aren't happening. They are happening and they are still severe.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about mask mandates, how they're faring in other states. We just implemented one here in New Hampshire starting today. What's your take on this? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. We're also going to talk about traveling for the holidays and guidelines on traveling between states. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. Or email exchange at nhpr.org. I'm Peter Biello, and this is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange on NHPR. We'll be right back. Monday on The Exchange, holiday etiquette and talking politics. We'll discuss how to navigate holiday conversations, and we'll also check in with food banks, see how they're doing, and we can share ways that you can help others in your community during this holiday season. Right now, it's the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you so much for tuning in. We're spending the hour looking at efforts across New England to slow the spread of COVID-19. And we're speaking with some folks who've been following the virus. Katie Jickling, health reporter for Vermont Digger. Patty White, health reporter for Maine Public Radio, Martha Biebinger, health reporter for WBUR, and Ethan DeWitt, reporter for the Concord Monitor. In just a few minutes, we're going to be speaking about travel guidance. Are you planning to travel for the Thanksgiving holiday? The CDC just recommended against it, but added that if you do decide to travel, do it, quote, as safely as possible by following the same recommendations for everyday living. Give us a call about your holiday travel plans, or if you're not planning to travel, let us know why. 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can also email exchange at nhpr.org. We heard earlier in the program that today is day one of New Hampshire's first statewide mask mandate. We'll have more on that at nhpr.org. But other states have already embraced the mask mandate. Martha Biebinger of WBUR, Governor Charlie Baker of Massachusetts says if you're in the Commonwealth and you're over the age of 5, you've got to wear one in public. When did he first implement this and how's it working out?
Well, the mask wearing in public has actually been in place for quite a while, but 2 weeks ago, he made it a little stricter by saying that you have to wear it indoors as well in any public spaces, even if you're further than 6 feet from someone. So this whole, like, you can take it off if you're 6 feet away, either outdoors or indoors, that's gone. So picture you're walking your dog. You think you don't have to take your mask with you. In Massachusetts, you absolutely do. There we do have a fine, but as Ethan was saying, like, the emphasis is really on reminding people to put it back on or be sure you have it with you rather than passing out $300 fines.
Wow, okay. Let's go to the phones and talk to Dan from Peterborough. Dan, thank you very much for calling.
Hi, thank you. I support the mask mandate in New Hampshire, and I think it's way overdue. I think it's a good thing because it kind of levels the playing field. I'm someone who has always, complied with wearing a mask, but you go out in public places and you see some people not wearing the mask. And then it's a little intimidating sometimes. You think to yourself, well, why aren't they wearing the mask? Do they not care? Or, you know, maybe I shouldn't be wearing a mask if I see other people not wearing it. So having the mandate kind of tells everybody that it's the expectation, and then there's no excuse for people not to wear it. And then, of course, we know that the science says wearing the mask is effective.
Well, Dan, thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate it. So leveling the playing field, a statewide mask mandate makes it so similar for everybody that no single town is singled out. Katie Jickling of VT Digger, Vermont has a mask mandate. What has Governor Phil Scott said about his mask mandate?
Yeah, Governor Phil Scott instituted the mask mandate on August 1st. So it's been several months now. And the reasons for doing so at that point were basically what the issues that Dan raised about making it easier to enforce for business owners and, you know, really sort of allowing the law rather than personal preference to govern people's decisions. There really hasn't been any enforcement. The state recently said they would start compliance checks for inns or restaurants or certain public spaces, but really, it's like in other places, the emphasis has been on education. And so far, for the most part, people have overwhelmingly been wearing masks, according to some of the sort of preliminary research and observation. So it seems like something that people have, for the most part, bought into, though, of course, that is not a universal adoption.
And Martha Biebinger, let me go back to you for a moment on the Commonwealth of Massachusetts and the mask mandate there. Is there any particular enforcement mechanism in Massachusetts for a mask mandate?
The emphasis is really on trying to remind people and educate people. So some towns have even started what they call ambassador programs, where people will walk the streets with masks and say, hey, I notice you don't have one. You know, it's the law. You need one. Here's one. Here's why. You know, just trying to make it more friendly and conversational so that it doesn't turn into an adversarial relationship between an individual and, you know, some local or state official. And I think part of that is really about trying to build trust for the many other restrictions that are happening in our lives, and also for the distribution of a vaccine when that comes. The idea is that this is a public health safety initiative, that we are in it together, that you know, you want to buy in voluntarily as opposed to having government say you must do this.
Mm-hmm. But at a certain point, some folks are never going to buy into that idea of we're all in this together. They're just going to say, I don't want to wear this mask, and I don't care about the guidelines. Does the state reserve the right to fine people if it gets to that point?
Oh, yes. So there can be a $300 fine for not wearing a mask. There are fines attached to not quarantining. There are fines attached to exceeding the limits on indoor and outdoor gatherings. But there hasn't been a lot of imposition of those fines yet.
Maine, Patty White, Governor Janet Mills issued a mask mandate.
Are Mainers complying with that?
You know, the director of our CDC has said that in the most recent surveys he's seen, about 85% of people are saying that they wear masks. And, you know, I think we hear a lot from people who see, you know, you had the caller who just said that, you know, he sees people that aren't wearing masks. We certainly hear that a lot. So it's not universal, but it sounds like we've got pretty good uptake, you know, around 85%. But our governor did just, at the beginning of the month, she kind of expanded on a previous mask order. Before, it was you needed to wear a mask in public spaces where physical distancing was difficult to maintain. Now it's you need to wear them in public spaces, indoor and outdoor, kind of along the lines of Massachusetts. Basically, whenever you leave the house, you should have your mask if you're going to run into someone, and you should wear it.
Okay. We got this note from Diane in Portsmouth, who says, unfortunately, the governor's decision to implement a mask mandate is locking the barn after the horse got out. This should have happened months ago and is completely political. Now that he was reelected, he feels safe. Unfortunately, we don't. That's the email from Diane in Portsmouth. Let's talk a little bit about travel guidelines, because they might vary widely from state to state. Thanksgiving, of course, less than a week away. Vermont has issued some strict guidelines for gatherings both indoors and outdoors. Katie Jickling, what about people traveling into Vermont? What are they going to have to do when they get there? Do they have a two-week quarantine?
Yes, as you've mentioned, just last week, there was the ban on all multi-household gatherings. So that means that you really can't gather with anybody that you don't live with some, you know, exceptions. If you don't live alone, I mean, if you live alone, you can gather with immediate family, but that applies to travel too. And so the state has really pushed down hard against travel. You cannot travel unless you quarantine, and you know, 14 days or 7 with a test, and the state has really discouraged it. And that has come while, you know, restaurants and gyms and such have remained open. And so I have heard some frustration from people who say, hey, you know, I can't see my grandchild for Thanksgiving, and yet restaurants are still open. That doesn't feel fair. So I think really people are making some tough decisions about whether they'll travel even within state to visit their family members.
And as far as I understand it, Katie, people who go to Vermont for so-called essential purposes don't have to quarantine. Is that true? And what would qualify as an essential purpose?
That is true. And the statute is pretty vague. So anybody who's traveling for work doesn't have to quarantine. You know, if you're shipping in groceries to a grocery store, that does not, nobody needs to quarantine. And there will be certain people, like parents picking up their college students this week, that will not be quarantining before or after they come into the state. So there are certain practical loopholes, and I think people can get frustrated by not seeing without that consistency, because as a caller mentioned, it feels unfair.
And what about, does it matter where someone comes from? It used to matter to Vermont where the traveler was coming from, but now is it just anywhere out of state?
Now the state has changed the way that it governs travel, and anyone out of state needs to quarantine. And that includes people coming, you know, right across the border from New Hampshire or Massachusetts. There's really not supposed to be any interstate travel without a quarantine.
Okay. And what about in Maine, Patty White? If we want to go to Maine from New Hampshire or from Massachusetts or Vermont, is there a two-week quarantine there as well?
So broadly, there is a two-week quarantine, or you need to have a negative test result from a sample that was taken within 72 hours of your arrival in Maine. There are some exceptions. It's Vermont and New Hampshire don't have to do that. The list of states that were exempt from those requirements was longer before, but several have been taken off the list. Just this past Monday, Massachusetts was taken off the list of exempt states. And some of the states that were exempt, you know, during the summer were New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, but that no longer applies. So currently, if you are coming to Maine from Vermont, New Hampshire, you don't have to do the two-week quarantine or get that negative test.
And Patty, Katie had mentioned the gyms and restaurants still being open in Vermont, and that creating kind of an unpleasant feeling for those who are really following strictly these quarantine rules. What about in Maine? Are restaurants and gyms and places like that still open, even despite these quarantine rules?
They are still open. Just yesterday, our governor announced that starting today, certain businesses have to close by 9 p.m., and that's places like restaurants, movie theaters, casinos, performing arts venues. And the idea is, you know, this time of the holiday, when a lot of people are kind of returning home, they really want to cut down on gatherings. And so that's why they're ordering these businesses to close by 9 p.m. And that goes through December 6th. So she hasn't done, you know, a broad sort of shut down. There is one sector of the economy that has never been allowed to open for indoor service. That's bars and tasting rooms. And that they were due to open at the beginning of November. But then as we were seeing cases surge, Governor Mills said that, that had to be postponed.
Okay. And in Massachusetts, Martha Beaminger of WBUR, what's happening there? If we go to Massachusetts from any of our states, do we have to quarantine for 2 weeks?
Well, as of today, there are four states where you do not have to quarantine for those 2 weeks when you're entering Massachusetts. It's New Hampshire, Maine, Vermont, and Hawaii. But we were told earlier this week that two of those states are going to come off the list. We don't know which two, but apparently
we don't
there's
know
some
which
state.
Two. Okay.
Apparently there's some state in New England that is about to come off the list. So it's a stay tuned moment in that regard. We do have some of the same restrictions that Patty was just describing. So there's a stay at home advisory here in Massachusetts between 10 p.m. and 5 a.m. And that's we don't know when that's gonna end. And that means that restaurants and liquor stores, for example, have to close at 9:30. So the idea is you would have a half an hour to get home. So that went into effect about 2 weeks ago, and it's not really clear how much of an impact that's having on the economy. But there was really a lot of frustration about that among that sector.
Certainly state governments are watching the impact on the economy very closely. We got this email from Jennifer who says, "We live in North Conway. The amount of tourists and out-of-state license plates up here is very high for November. Most of these people are from states with higher incidence of COVID. We think something stronger than a two-week quarantine is in order." Ethan DeWitt of the Concord Monitor, I could put that to you. Has there been any indication from DHHS or Governor Sununu that this two-week quarantine is going to be changed at all in New Hampshire?
No, they haven't given any indication of that. And more importantly, as I said, kind of at the beginning of this program, the governor has indicated that he is at this point not considering any further restrictions on restaurants and businesses, nor on gatherings, nor even on kind of some of these halfway measures we've seen in states that were just being discussed of, 9 p.m. Restaurant closures or 10 p.m. That hasn't been discussed, and the governor has indicated that he thinks it'd need to get really bad. I bring that up because I think that Katie's point in Vermont, it kind of speaks to how any one of these restrictions operate as part of like a bigger whole. And so when you look at, for instance, New Hampshire does have a quarantine requirement. That was implemented last week. It was tightened so that you must quarantine for 14 days if you're traveling from outside of New England. So any New England state is in that bubble. And if you get a negative test, you only quarantine for 7 days. But that's only one piece, and obviously that's very difficult to enforce. So if you combine that with what in Vermont has been, a ban on multi-household gatherings, now you have two layers. You have the quarantine, and you have a ban on the gatherings in general. So you have kind of two things to point to when you're looking at something like a Thanksgiving gathering. When you only have kind of one thing, and when restaurants are open and bars are open as they are in New Hampshire, it becomes, I think, harder from both an enforcement point of view and also from just kind of like a behavioral economics point of view in terms of what is going to incentivize people to kind of start following the guidelines. And kind of, so I think that my point is that you kind of have to look at this as a whole.
Hey, Peter.
Okay. Go ahead. Jump in.
Yeah. So this is Martha in Boston. I just wanted to respond to your listener from North Conway, just to be clear that there is some science behind this, the length of this quarantine. I can appreciate people's feeling that they need something stronger, but the idea there is that the virus can incubate for up to 14 days. But if you've been exposed and you quarantine for 14 days, after 14 days, there's no science yet that indicates there's a risk you are still going to become infected and possibly transmit to anyone. So there is some science behind that number.
Right. All these two-week quarantines that these states are implementing, it's based in some kind of research about the virus, so not simply an arbitrary thing. We get this note from Terrell in Fremont who says, "My husband, daughter, and I usually fly to Missouri to visit my parents and my siblings and their families for Thanksgiving, But we won't be doing that this year. We only see my family a couple of times a year in the best of times, but we didn't think twice about canceling, especially given the virus situation in Missouri. My 13-year-old daughter is an only child who loves to spend time with her cousins, but this year we have a very small Thanksgiving at home, just the three of us. This is definitely a bummer, but is safest for everyone. Listeners, if you have questions or comments about how the states surrounding New Hampshire are handling COVID and what you think New Hampshire should be doing to slow the spread of the virus, give us a call. Our number is 1-800-892-6477. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about contact tracing. We'll talk about hospital capacity and vaccine preparedness. Again, your questions or comments are welcome. Call us now, 1-800-892-6477. This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. We'll be right back. This is the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup on The Exchange on NHPR. I'm Peter Biello. With me today are reporters from four New England states to talk about their state's approaches to stopping the spread of COVID-19. We've got Martha Biebinger, health reporter for WBUR in Boston, Patty White, health reporter for Maine Public Radio, Katie Jickling, health reporter for VT Digger in Vermont, and Ethan DeWitt of the Concord Monitor here in New Hampshire. Let's talk a little bit about hospital capacity, because that's always a concern, especially as case numbers rise and the need for things like ventilators becomes more acute. Yesterday at a press conference, DHHS Commissioner Lori Chibonet said the state right now has quite a bit of capacity.
But that is changing very, very quickly. If we doubled our hospital capacity in 2 weeks, if we double again in another 2 weeks, that's going to start to strain us. And so this type of action is putting in a mask mandate allows us to put a protective restriction in place so that 3 weeks from now we are in a better place hospitalization wise.
That's DHHS Commissioner Lori Chibonet explaining the situation here in New Hampshire right now. Martha Biebinger, what about the hospital capacity situation in Massachusetts? Are there enough beds for a possible surge of people who need them?
Well, it really depends on what that surge looks like. So I was speaking to the head of Mass General Brigham, which is our biggest hospital network, yesterday, and they had been anticipating a sort of slow, steady rise in cases. And that is what we were seeing until 2 or 3 days ago. And then we started to see those numbers climb faster than expected. So there's a lot of adjusting all the time to try to figure out whether we have enough. Right now, the big hospitals in Boston are getting close to capacity. They're not there yet, as far as I know. But this is why there is so much attention on Thanksgiving, because there's just not room to accommodate and a spike that might come with new infections if people do a lot of mingling around the holidays.
I see. And Katie Jickling, how about in Vermont? What's hospital capacity like there?
So far, we haven't seen a lot of people who need to be hospitalized. The state currently has 17 people who are in the hospital with COVID. But just this past week, the state decided to rebuild a 200-bed field hospital that is at a fairgrounds, as well as another 50-bed surge site. And basically what the state had done previously in the spring with the first wave is that they had built these basically mobile surge sites next to hospitals. Then they packed them up in May. And people from the Agency of Human Services say that we can really rebuild those within 48 hours if need be. So we're not seeing the need for additional hospital beds yet, but you know, the state is really saying like we're in a much better place than we were in the first wave, and we can accommodate at least any sort of surge in the foreseeable future.
Okay. And what about in Maine, Patty White? Does Maine have enough hospital bed capacity to accommodate a surge?
I mean, at this point, we have pretty good capacity, so no one's really sounding the alarms right now. But hospitalizations have gone up. I mean, a month ago, our hospitalization rate was 0.5 per 100,000 people. Now it's 5 per 100,000. So, or maybe even actually a little bit more than that at this point. So hospitalizations are definitely increasing, but right now there's capacity. And, you know, some state officials talked about the prospect of field hospitals here. And they said that that is certainly an option. We did set some up early on, just like Katie was talking about in Vermont, but they were also saying that they'd prefer to just keep care in the hospitals. And probably a first step would be, you know, stopping elective surgeries and things like that to increase capacity, you know, in existing hospitals before we would need to get to those field sites.
Let's go to the phones and talk to Kim in Keene. Kim, thank you very much for calling. What's on your mind?
Thanks for taking my call. I have two children coming home from college, one today, one next week, and I wondered if you had any advice for families who have kids coming home from college.
Thank you, Kim. We're going to get an answer to your question in just a moment, but we have another question about students coming home for college. That's Joe. Joe in Concord. Thanks for calling. What's your question?
Yes, my fiance and I, we're not bringing him home from college. We're bringing her son home from visiting friends. And what we're wondering, whether or not we have to test before we go to Maine. And I know that we're going to have to quarantine when we come back because he has been in Maine for like 2 weeks.
Wow. Okay. So first question about the college student regarding a student coming back to New Hampshire. Put that to Ethan DeWitt of the Concord Monitor. Ethan, if we've got a college student coming back to New Hampshire from out of state,
what would be doing to keep his or herself or anybody else safe?
Yeah, well, so per the state guidelines, that would be kind of when that quarantine kicks in, if they're coming, especially if they're coming from outside of New England. I would say the first bit of advice is to get a test as quickly as possible. The state has increased its testing availability, and there are a number of kind of both public and private sources for tests. If you do get a test, as we discussed earlier, under the state guidelines, then the quarantine period shortens to 7 days, just as it does in other states. But I think that this would be an example of kind of following the restriction that is in place. That would be kind of the healthiest thing to do, and trying to secure a test as soon as possible.
And the second caller, Ethan, had a question about, I believe, the college student visiting friends in Maine and then having to quarantine when they come back. I think that's what it was about. Is that correct?
Well,
if someone leaves to go to Maine for a little while and comes back?
Technically, actually, New Hampshire's quarantine, as I was saying earlier, only applies to people coming from outside of New England. Now, that's obviously what the state has decided to set its policy. That doesn't necessarily mean what you as an individual, the kind of level of risk. Everything is, I think it's a mistake to kind of follow rigidly only up to the water's edge of what state officials are suggesting. I would say in that situation, again, as soon as possible, if they could get a test, and if they're kind of worried about spread in the household, if there's any way to kind of isolate within the household, these are all measures to think of beyond what the state's requirements are, because Maine right now does not require technically a quarantine, but a quarantine is advised.
Let's go to the phones and talk to Rachel, who's calling from Maine. Hi, Rachel. What's on your mind?
Hi, I'm actually in Nashua, New Hampshire. Quick question.
Oh, you're in Nashua. Okay.
I'm in Nashua, yeah. So, number one is all of our medical professionals, our dentists, our doctors, everything, they're in Massachusetts. So how are we supposed to navigate this if Massachusetts puts in restrictions coming from New Hampshire, number one? Number two, you're talking about testing. They're not very easy to get. If you're a New Hampshire resident, my husband and I had an exposure 2 weeks ago, and we were told there was a week out before we could go get tested. Fortunately, we're fine. But where do we go to get these tests right away?
Put that to Ethan DeWitt. Ethan, where do you go to get a test?
Thanks for that. I would say to kind of look into if you go to the state's website, they should have areas that are kind of administered by the state. That's one area to look up. And then other areas to look up are pharmacies often are kind of administering tests. If you look up local pharmacies and you call in advance, you may be able to get a test, depending on which kinds of tests you are looking for.
I see. Well, on the subject of testing and how easy it is to access a test, let's hear from the panel. In Massachusetts, Martha Biebinger, how easy or difficult is it to get a test for COVID-19?
Yeah, so I was just trying to look up for Rachel. The state has these sites called Stop the Spread. There are a few in the northern part of the state, Rachel, so you could pull up that site because those are free. Now, there might be a line. You know, I went there in October and had to wait 3 hours at one point for a test. So if you're asymptomatic, you know, if you have symptoms in Massachusetts, or you have been a close contact of somebody who is confirmed positive, you go through the health system and it's pretty quick. We're doing a ton of testing. I mean, like 90,000 tests a day right now. But if you just want to travel for Thanksgiving, or you aren't sure if you were exposed to somebody, then you have to find that test on your own. Then it costs, you know, could be $250 or more, and you have to wait. Can I just add one thing Rachel asked about coming to Massachusetts?
Certainly.
For medical care? So when you enter a hospital in Massachusetts right now, you're going to need to get a test in advance. So if there's a procedure that requires you to enter a hospital, the hospital will set up for you to have a test in advance. If you're just going to the dentist, you know, the dentists don't do that, but they will screen you, you know, asking about symptoms, taking your temperature before you come in, that sort of thing. So that's the procedure here.
I see. And in Vermont, Katie Jickling, how hard is it to get a COVID test?
Vermont's doing quite a lot of testing. They're doing about 20,000 tests a day, which, and of course, we have a much smaller population than some of the other New England states. So that's a fair amount. And the state actually announced that they've already created 5 state-run testing sites that are free and are open 7 days a week, and they're going to increase that to 14 by the end of the month. So, and there is regular testing for teachers and at long-term care facilities. So it seems like, and it is quite a lot of testing, especially compared to most other states in the country. But for people, if you're not one of those target populations, such as teachers or somebody in an elder care home, it can still be at least a week wait, and it's still not always easy to navigate the just the bureaucracy and call. I actually was looking for a test recently, and I ended up calling, you know, probably 7 or 8 different places to see when they were offering it and where I could get one. So there are still challenges in spite of certain successes.
I see. And in Maine, Patty White, what can Mainers expect when they're searching to find a place to get tested, and maybe cost? What's it like in Maine?
Well, I think right now, just anecdotally, we're hearing about a bottleneck with testing, I think because of the holidays. So I think right now you're looking for a wait potentially. But the state has set up about 30, they call them swab and send sites. Those are connected to the state lab, and you can actually get a free test at those sites. And actually just yesterday they announced that a bunch of new testing sites are coming online, which may address some of this holiday bottleneck, but it's the way that Maine is using the federal allocation of those Binax Now rapid tests. The state has an agreement with Walgreens pharmacies, about 65 of them across the state, where people can get tested. So I think that might help people right now who are looking for tests. But in general, our testing rate is a number that's going up. It's one number that's going up that is a good thing. So generally we're doing a lot of testing, but for sure right now, I think it's a little bit challenging.
On the subject of vaccines, both Pfizer and Moderna have developed vaccines that look promising. And state governments are working on a priority list of who gets those vaccines first. And yesterday at a press conference, Beth Daly, Bureau Chief of Infectious Disease Control at New Hampshire's DHHS, spoke about the state of New Hampshire receiving doses of COVID-19 vaccines next month. Here's what she said.
We expect that the vaccine coming to New Hampshire is going to be in very limited supply initially, although we don't have any exact numbers from the federal government just yet. What we're going to do is look at those national recommendations around who should receive this initial allotments of vaccine, and then adapt those recommendations to our own state and local needs. Our plan will call for a phased distribution of vaccine as the vaccine is made available to us. So we're going to plan to start vaccinating those people who are at highest risk for severe illness and dying, as well as our essential high-risk healthcare workers and first responders.
So, Ethan DeWitt, that's Beth Daly speaking about the vaccine yesterday at the press conference. State of New Hampshire seems to be following CDC guidelines. Is that pretty much in line with what was expected?
Yeah, this is something that she announced that, but the state had come out with a plan earlier this month that kind of highlighted what the phases are going to be, priorities for first responders in the beginning, for adults in nursing homes, for high-risk health workers, firefighters, EMS. That's first tier of priorities. Second tier would be adults in overcrowded areas, as well as elderly adults who may not be in nursing homes, but obviously are still at risk. And school staff, older adults, all that would be in a second phase. And in the third phase, it would expand out to, children, young adults. And then the fourth phase would be kind of to everybody.
Well, we have to leave it there, but we have to end the show, but I appreciate the comments. But yep. There's more reporting on this and links to stories by all of the panelists today at NHPR.org. Thanks very much to Ethan DeWitt of the Concord Monitor, Martha Biebinger, health reporter for WBUR in Boston, Katie Jickling, health reporter for VT Digger, and Patty White, health reporter for Maine Public Radio. Thank you all very much for being on the program today.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio.
Dan Colgan, our executive producer
is Michael Brindley. Jessica Hunt and Christina Phillips are producers of The Exchange, and Jane Vaughn is our Exchange Fellow. Special thanks to RJ Perkins and Randy Woods for helping lend lots of tech help for today's show. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. I'm Peter Biello. Thank you very much for listening, and have a great weekend.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you missed part of today's program, listen to The Exchange anytime at nhpr.org or subscribe to our podcast. Search Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or Stitcher for NHPR Exchange.